Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is June 10th, 2021. Our panel today has four matters on its calendar. Two of those are oral, and I see the attorneys are present for the first matter. I'll ask the clerk to call that in just a minute. But just to remind everyone, we are appearing via Zoom today, and these proceedings are being conducted via Zoom. Terrific to see both attorneys present. But all our other procedures are as per usual. So one of those is that no recordings of these proceedings are allowed, apart from the court makes a recording of the proceeding, an or audio recording, and that recording will be available on the court's website. So with that, of course, you can ask questions if you have other questions about our procedures, but really things are just as normal apart from the fact that we're appearing via Zoom. So with that, I will ask the marshal to call the first case, and then I'll have just a few other quick remarks before we start the arguments.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bradfold, Judge Conley, Judge Hooten, the Honorable Diane Bradfold presiding, now calling A20-1405 in re the guardianship of Ryan Van Heuwen.
I have two real quick additional comments. So one is that everyone's familiar with our time parameters, and hopefully you can see the clock on your screen now. So watch it as the time goes down because it tends to go quickly. We really enjoy having this chance to talk to the attorneys. And then before you start your remarks, you each get your separate chances to begin. If you would identify yourself for the record as well as the client you represent. So with that, we're ready to go ahead with the case. I did want to ask counsel for appellant, if you would work it in or maybe start it at the beginning of your remarks, just advise us on the correct pronunciation of your client's last name. I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Certainly, Your Honor. Yeah, it's Wynn, Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Van Wynn?
Mr. Wynn.
Mr. Wynn. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Wynn.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court and Mr. Story, good morning. My name is Jason Schellack, S-C-H-E-L-L-A-C-K. I'm an attorney with the Autism Advocacy and Law Center, and I'm appearing this morning on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Ramey Van Wynn. As the court knows, this is a guardianship matter, and the two issues really before the court, and Your Honor, I don't mean to stop, the timer isn't going. I just want to make sure...
There it is.
Okay. All right. I don't want to make sure I'm not taking more time than I'm allowed. The two issues really, Your Honors, before the court are number one, whether the district court abused its discretion in appointing Lutheran Social Services as successor guardian for the respondent, Ryan Van Wynn, when LSS did not appear at the hearing and its appearance was not waived for good cause by the district court. The second issue that I'll need to discuss with the court this morning is whether the district court committed clear error when it found that it was in Ryan's best interest for Lutheran Social Services to be appointed as successor guardian. And this is critical to the case, Your Honors. Without any evidence, any testimony, any appearance, any facts on the record regarding whether Lutheran Social Services had knowledge of the respondent's needs, had any ability to address his complex needs. It's an undisputed fact that the respondent has very complex needs that require an attentive guardian, and whether they have the ability to help him lead a more respondent life. That is crucial to this case and to the court's decision, that there was no testimony, no evidence, nothing to support the district court's decision that it was in the respondent's best interest to have essentially a stranger to the court be appointed as a guardian.
Can I ask you about that, though? I mean, you're saying it's a stranger to the court, but wasn't there a filing of an acceptance of the proposed guardianship by Lutheran Services?
Thank you, Your Honor. The court is absolutely correct. What the court's referring to is a common procedural filing in guardianship matters known as an acceptance and appointment. The statute requires that to be filed in order for the court, the district court, to appoint somebody as a guardian. And essentially, by filing that, Lutheran Social Services is signaling to the court, if you appoint us, we will serve as guardian. However, what And what I would like to refer the court's attention, there are a number of, I think, very important cases, cases from the Court of Appeals in this matter. What this oath and acceptance doesn't show to us is whether Lutheran Social Services has the capacity and the knowledge to meet Ryan's needs. I would like to draw the court's attention to the Kowalski case, In re the Guardianship of Kowalski, Minnesota Court of Appeals, 1991. And to
counsel, I'm familiar with the Kowalski case, and it my reading of Kowalski is just like yours. It says what it says, but the statutes have changed since Kowalski. And I think you're honing in on your second issue here, which is that the district court lacked evidence of knowledge of Ryan's needs, or lacked evidence of LSS had knowledge and familiarity with Ryan's needs, and therefore couldn't appoint LSS. So what I think you're getting at is, I'm trying to fit it into a box with the current statutory structure. So are you contending that LSS is not qualified to be a professional guardian?
What I'm contending, Your Honors, is that there is no evidence in the record whether LSS is qualified or not qualified. The only thing in the only communication from LSS to the court was that there was an oath and acceptance filed stating that Lutheran Social Services is a corporation. I have it in front of me, Your Honors, that they agreed to be bound by the law relating to guardians, that they'll submit to the jurisdiction of the court.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with what
it's
that oath.
Pro forma language, Your Honor. It has nothing to do with Ryan's needs.
Well, is there a dispute as to whether Lutheran Social Services is a professional guardianship provider?
No, Your Honors. I mean, I've been practicing in this area for well over 8 years. I personally know that LSS practices in this field. The issue that comes up in this case is that Ryan is a unique individual with complex needs, and there's no evidence in the record regarding whether Lutheran Social Services is suitable and qualified to be Ryan's guardian. They might be a great guardian for somebody else, but with regard to the respondent, there is absolutely zero evidence in the record that they are capable of meeting his needs.
Well, could I just ask you this? Because I understand the record, your argument, and may have some merit that it could be better if they had had more evidence regarding the array of services offered by Lutheran Social Services. But it appears from reviewing the order that the judge's primary concern was that this ward was very adamant that your client not be appointed as the guardian. And there were numerous people who testified that that it would be detrimental to have your client appointed. With that understanding, I mean, the court basically had the choice between this situation that the experts said was very detrimental to the ward, or a professional guardianship. Why was it an abuse of discretion based upon the evidence submitted that the court went with the professional guardianship?
I don't dispute, Your Honor, the fact that the respondent, that Ryan, during the proceedings, testified that he did not want my client to be his guardian. I think when the court is referring to experts, the court is probably referring to some statements from physicians.
Well, yes.
Sure. And they, Your Honor, they didn't testify, but we did stipulate to their statements being put into the record. The court can... So to answer Your Honor, your question directly, it's an abuse of discretion because the court has knowledge. The court had much knowledge, much testimony regarding my client's ability to serve as guardian, his background as a parent, his current job as a special education manager.
And I understand all that evidence was produced, and it certainly seemed that your client did have some experience as a special education teacher and understood the needs of the ward. But the judge weighed all of that, and I, as a reviewing court, I mean, we're basically reviewing whether the judge abused his or her discretion in deciding these cases. And that's based upon whatever evidence is produced. And how, in this case, is this an abuse of discretion based on what was produced? Because the judge obviously weighed all that. It's all in the judge's order.
With due respect to the court, Your Honor, I would say there was no weighing done with regard to Lutheran Social Services. There were no factors. There were no. There was no testimony.
No, and I understand. I mean, but all the judge had, and I understand your argument that perhaps it would have been a better record if they had produced the little evidence as to the array of services available. But they, the, what was weighed was that this is a professional guardianship service that's provided, and. And because of all the negative information that was received regarding the ward's objection to your client, how did the court abuse its discretion based on what was presented in court?
The court abused its discretion by appointing a stranger to the court, by appointing somebody the court had no knowledge of, by appointing a party, a corporate, a professional guardian, from whom the court had no testimony. There is no record that Lutheran Social Services knew anything about Ryan's needs, knew anything about his history, knew anything about his future needs, knew anything about applying for medical assistance, Social Security, a county waiver, and had a plan for Ryan to foster into his independence going forward. The court had all of that from my client.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Is it an impermissible, reasonable inference that by the fact that Lutheran Social Services filed this document accepting it, that they considered this, considered the needs, and assumed that they could handle it?
I don't know what the court can infer from this document other than when I'm advising clients, my firm handles 2 to 3, 4 guardianships a week, Your Honor, and this document is really a pro forma document that we statutorily have to file with the court saying, Your Honor, if you appoint me, I accept the appointment. That is all that that document communicates to the court. This document does not communicate to the court qualifications, knowledge of the wards.
So, counsel, I think I understand where you're going. I have a slightly different question from Judge Hooten's. So let's just give you everything that I'm hearing you argue right now, that the record lacks evidence of LSS's qualifications. And in your opinion, that's fundamental, and therefore the appointment's erroneous. So where does that really leave us? Because what you don't, in my opinion, what your appeal does not challenge is that the district court has rejected the father's petition and has done so with evidence and that supports its determination that it would not be in the ward's best interest for father to be appointed as the guardian. And that's primarily, Judge Hooten's already alluded to it, there's evidence that it would be detrimental to the ward's mental health. There are other reasons too, but that was certainly primary in the district court's opinion. So I just don't understand, where would we just remand it and ask the district court to make findings about LSS's qualifications? Or what sort of relief are you really looking for? Because this doesn't result in the father becoming appointed. He's been rejected. The judge had a basis for that. And I don't see a basis for this court to reverse that part of the district court's decision.
That's a good question, Your Honor. I'm happy to answer it. So at trial in July of last year, the court really had two options. There were two competing petitions, either to appoint my client, the appellant, or to appoint Lutheran Social Services. Given those two choices, the court, I think, had to make a decision between the two of them. And the court made the court made the wrong decision, appointed a stranger, appointed somebody who is, as far as the record is concerned, that this court has no qualifications to be Ryan's successor guardian. We are asking for, to answer the court's question directly, as far as what relief are we seeking, we are seeking that the Court of Appeals reverse the district court's decision and appoint my client as Ryan's successor guardian. There's ample evidence in the record that he's qualified to do the job. He's capable of doing the
job. Counsel, I need you to answer. It's not about father's qualifications. The district court rejected father as a guardian, not because of his qualifications, but because of the best interests analysis and the evidence and facts that the district court found, which I believe are fully supported by the record. You need to enlighten me why they aren't, because I'm not following you in that regard.
Your Honor, I don't dispute that on multiple occasions, the person subject to guardianship, Ryan, testified that he didn't want his father to be his guardian. But the court, that's one of the many considerations the district court has to make when deciding who to appoint as a guardian. So when given two choices between someone who's ready, willing, and able and a stranger, I think the court only had one decision. The district court had to appoint the person in front of the court who testified, who was subject to cross-examination, who answered the court's questions, who answered questions by counsel, and is nominated to be a guardian. With regard to the relief we are seeking, again, we are seeking that the court reverse and ask and order the district court to appoint my client, Mr. Nguyen, as the successor guardian. In the alternative, if the Court of Appeals finds that that is not an acceptable avenue of relief, we would request that this court reverse and remand to the district court for further proceedings, so that at the very minimum, we can, the court, now that Lutheran Social Services is the guardian, Judge Street has the authority to call Lutheran Social Services in whenever she wants to. If you're the guardian, you are subject to the court at all times, the jurisdiction of the court at all times and all things, and at least give us the opportunity to direct examine, cross-examine, and find out whether Lutheran Social Services is doing a good job, is qualified, and is meeting Ryan's needs. So that would be the alternative relief that we'd be requesting from the court, would be a reverse and remand for further proceedings, so that my client and the court has at least some knowledge rather than no knowledge as to Lutheran Social Services qualifications to serve as guardian. Right now, they're a stranger.
Mr. Schlag, I did have one question before your time expires. So obviously, I assume it's your position that it was Mr. Story's burden to prove that Lutheran Social Services was qualified based on its knowledge of the child.
That's correct.
Okay. So your position then would be, I assume, since it's his burden, you didn't have to raise any objections at the trial if he wasn't going to call any witnesses.
Your Honor, my response to that directly would be by virtue of the fact that we filed a petition to appoint my client as successor guardian, we are in effect objecting to anybody else being appointed as guardian.
So, at a particular Lutheran Social Services. So how do you how would you respond, Mr. Schellack, to an argument that, well, that this has all been waived? I mean, presumably if you had said, wait a minute, we need to hear how Lutheran Social Services is going to handle the child based on their knowledge. And I presume if you had made that objection, the court would have said, okay, where are they? Get them here. So how would you respond to that argument, sir?
I respond to that, Your Honor, by saying that was poor trial strategy on the respondent's part. The respondent had the burden of proving to the court Lutheran Social Services was best qualified and most suited to meet Ryan's needs. If the respondent did not call an agent of Lutheran Social Services to prove his case, it's not my job, it's not appellant's job to go and fix that error for him and put on that evidence for him.
And you were counsel below, correct?
I was trial counsel, Your Honor.
Okay. So this...
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
All right. No, I think that's a good answer. Thank you.
Judge Defoe, may I ask one more question?
Yeah, go ahead, Judge.
All right. I just want to zero in on the statute, which requires that the proposed guardian attend the hearing. And is there anything in this record that indicates that the guardian was present at the hearing?
Your Honor, I believe there are remarks on the record that an employee from Lutheran Social Services was somewhere in the gallery. This was an in-person hearing back in July of 2020. I don't know that person. I can't independently confirm who that person was, but I believe Mr. Story in his brief cites to the record that he asserts there was somebody from LSS in the audience, but certainly nobody who took the stand and provided testimony to the court. And I can't make any representations who that person was. I do know of certain agents and employees of Lutheran Social Services. I did not recognize any of my colleagues there in the courtroom on July 17th of 2020.
Thank you.
So thank you, counsel. We very much appreciate your argument. You do have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So if you'd like to follow up on any of these points later, you may do that.
Certainly.
So I see the marshal has reset the clock and we are ready to hear from respondent. So you can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jeffrey J. Story, that's Story, on behalf of the respondent, Ryan Wynn. And at the top of my notes, Your Honors, is which party in this case provided a preponderance of the evidence to support the appointment of a successor guardian. And I would submit to Your Honors that the overwhelming evidence presented here through direct testimony of the protected person and through witnesses that appeared and through professionals that appeared through their exhibit evidence all were in support of the appointment of anyone but the appellant. Anyone but.
Well, you know, I mean, you can't, you know, I remember, I'll, you know, when Lincoln was told he needs to fire McClellan and replace him, he replied, with who? And the response was, anyone. And Lincoln replied, I can't replace McClellan with anyone. I must replace him with someone. What is the evidence in the record that supports the appointment of your client as guardian? I.e., that he knows, they, you know, they know the child, they know the child's needs, here's what we're going to do to meet those needs, blah, blah, blah. Where would we look for that, Mr. Story?
Yeah, and since February in the proceeding of this matter, the appellant, father, was very aware that my client was asking for the appointment of Lutheran Social Services. So
just to be clear, Mr. Story, your client is the ward or guardian in this case, correct? Not Lutheran Social Services?
That's right.
Yeah, I just want to be clear on that. So when you say my client, that's who you're talking about.
Yes.
And I know it's your client's petition was to have LSS appointed as the guardian. But I think Judge Connolly's question is right. It's nailed right on the head. So it is your burden to prove many things in support of your petition. But one of them is that Lutheran Social Services is otherwise qualified because that's the starting point for then going down. We all know that father is given priority as a guardian under the statute. Lutheran Social Services has a lesser priority. So the statute says, well, among otherwise qualified guardians, you know, this is how it works. And so where's your evidence that that Lutheran Social Services is qualified?
Your Honor, I too have worked in the area of guardianship for over 15 years. I too have been in the courtroom many, many times in Anoka County and other counties when Lutheran Social Services sits in the gallery and is appointed by the trial court without ever taking the stand. So my response is Lutheran Social Services is a very reputable, the most reputable, most reputable a professional that I am aware of that provides these services. They reviewed the circumstances of the case with my submissions prior to ever agreeing to accept this case.
Well, could I ask you, Mr. Story, because I'm looking at the statute 524.5 5-307A, which says, unless excused by the court for good cause, the petitioner and the proposed guardian shall, that's a big word, attend the hearing. And here it's equivocal as to even whether that happened in the, on this record. Is that a fair statement?
The guardian, proposed guardian, Lucerne Social Services, was at court. They were acknowledged by the district court while sitting in the gallery. My client actually asked at one point to go for a walk with his new guardian, and the court had to say, they're not the new guardian yet. I'm pointing this out, Your Honors, to say the guardian was, you know, if we look at this statute, the proposed guardian shall attend the hearing. The next sentence says, the respondent shall attend and participate in the hearing unless excused. That language does not say that the proposed guardian shall participate. The guardian was there. The guardian did, I'm not trying to run one on anyone, but the guardian was in the gallery. And
I ask you this though? Because I mean, here the dispute is which guardian would be the best for your client, and that's the dispute. The statute requires the guardian shall attend the hearing. If in fact Lutheran Social Services, based on its reputation, can be deemed an appropriate guardian just by name and reputation, why wouldn't it be necessary for the proposed guardian to attend? And what is there in this record that supports that? I mean, what if you have a judge who hasn't been in probate for 15 years and that hasn't done these cases, and the judge is required under our law to just go on the record? What is there in this record that indicates that that Lutheran Social Services would be the best guardian for your client?
I appreciate that, Your Honor. The district court had two choices before it and two separate petitions, and those choices were defined. The choices were the appellant or a neutral professional guardian. And that totality of circumstances, I would submit, has to be taken into consideration in looking at the best interest of my client and how those best interests were served. I cannot.
Mr. Story, maybe is there, you know, one way to, when the child testified, he obviously said, you know, there's overwhelming evidence, I think, that he did not want Mr. Schleck's client. Did he ever say something like, and I've dealt with, you know, whoever this person is from LSS, and they're good, and I like them? I mean, is there anything, did he say anything like that, either on direct or cross? Again, not that I don't like the father, but that he liked LSS for whatever reason.
Yes, Your Honor, I did run my client through in the bringing of the petition. Back in April, he knew he was a higher functioning disabled person. He knew that I explained what LSS, who they were, what they did. No, Your Honor, he had not met or asked to meet with an agent, but he participated throughout in asking that. And I asked him on the trial record whether he wanted LSS to be appointed, and he said yes. Absolutely, he said yes.
You know, and here's my problem. It seemed like the legislature, by requiring the proposed guardian to attend, obviously had some underlying purpose for that, requirement. And here we have the issue as to who would be the best guardian, which, you know, and the court was faced with that issue. And the argument of the appellant is the court really didn't have anything to weigh here. And that at a minimum, there should be some evidence in the record as to the ability of the proposed guardian to do the job. And that's missing in this record. Why is that argument not, why would that argument not have some merit?
It may have some merit. I'm going to say that LSS made a request of this counsel that their agent not be subject to cross-examination. That's what happened.
I mean, because if I, you know, if I take this, I mean, you're saying, well, your client said he wanted it, but what if, you know, the ward wanted some crazy guardianship and, you know, that was totally inappropriate. I mean, that doesn't seem to move the ball forward very much. I mean, it's significant in that it's his preference, but it doesn't go toward the ability of the proposed guardianship to do
the job. I agree, Your Honor, but looking at the totality of what we're looking at here and looking at the Kowalski reference to the suitability of the proposed guardian, certainly the father is not the suitable candidate to be this guardian. And so, again, what the statute calls for did occur. That guardian was in the gallery, and the district court knew the guardian was in the gallery and didn't choose to bring her up. And neither did...
Well, counsel, I have to stop you for a moment as to that... That what the transcript shows as to the district court's questioning. As I read the transcript, the district court really just asked who was your client, Ryan, meeting with in the back of the courtroom. Maybe I haven't been in that courtroom, so I don't know exactly how it's set up. But that was the question from the judge. The judge did not have any sort of on the record discussion about calling up LSS or having LSS attend. And I'd like it if you could answer Judge Hooten's question a little more directly, even based on your experience. Obviously, the statute has a requirement for a guardian to attend a hearing. So normally it's a little different from appearing at a hearing. We're all familiar with that. And parties are required to appear and note their appearances. Judges take care to do that. This statute says attend. So why is that overlooked? And you can feel free to rely on your experience, but it was clearly overlooked here. There was no note that LSS attended the hearing.
Your Honor, I'm going outside the record, and I shouldn't, but LSS at their highest level asked that their agent not be subject to cross-examination. That's why I chose not to
call. Counsel, that's extremely troubling. A guardian is subject, as you know, we have discussed, and you know this, subject to direction by the court and is subject to examination by the court, cross-examination by the parties.
My understanding was that the court would call that guardian up if they knew, if they wanted to, Your Honor. And I'm not, that's my feeling, is that the court went through that trial knowing that that person was there and had the ability to say, I want to hear. She was a very proactive during this trial, mm-hmm. The district court was. And, you know, looking at the Schmidt case and the reply brief, what didn't happen here on the appellant's end was there was no objection on the record to the lack of appearance by the appellant, to the lack of the appearance of the guardian. And that was crucial in the deciding of the Schmidt case. That was noted that.
Well, and you're saying, and I did some probate work when I was a district court judge, and I know the guardians did often sit in the gallery and they didn't get involved, but there was no issue as to picking between competing guardians in those cases. And here that's the key issue here. And I think it distinguishes it from the case where there's really no argument as to whether the proposed guardian is competent to or is the appropriate guardianship to do the job. And here that was the key issue that was being tried. And so I guess I'm coming back to on what basis could we, and this is Mr. Schellick's argument. He's saying there was nothing to weigh. And I don't know how, in light of the statute, we say it, or we find in your client's favor on this, because it does seem that the legislature anticipated that there'd be some that the guardian would be there, and that the judge has to assess, you know, whether this guardian, the proposed guardian, is appropriate.
My response is the weight of the evidence in the best interest of my client. I hear what the court is saying, but in my client's mental health, it would be devastating to have the appellant appointed. And I think all things considered, we give wide discretion to the decisions of the district court. We say that they are the person that's weighing all the evidence and the credibility of the people testifying. I would urge this court to look at all that preponderance of evidence and find that the district court made the correct decision. No abuse of discretion occurred, Your Honors.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, counsel. With that, I think we're just about there. So 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Schlack, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly touching on a couple of issues raised by Mr. Story. I agree with Mr. Story to the extent that a lot of these hearings are uncontested proceedings. I've been in many with Mr. Story where sometimes a proposed guardian might be sitting in a gallery. And as long as there's no objection by either party, and it's agreed upon and the parties have reviewed a proposed order that gets submitted to the judge, oftentimes that person may be appointed as the guardian without any appeal. That is not the case here. This was a highly contested guardianship proceeding. And I think Your Honors really pointed out well what the statute requires. The statute requires that the proposed guardian shall attend the hearing. Whether there was an agent in the gallery, again, there's some reference to that in the record. That person certainly didn't attend in the sense of providing, making an appearance at the hearing, providing the court with his or her name, address, and providing some testimony. This is the first time, Your Honors, I've heard.
Counsel, if you'd just slow down for a second, I think what you're arguing, if I'm hearing you, is what does it mean to attend a hearing? And you're saying that it means what?
That person would be subject, that person would have to make an appearance on the record, state their name, their address, their occupation, and why that person is there.
What authority do you rely on for that? The statute definitely doesn't define attend. And you and I are, you know, we're all familiar with usual court proceedings. Appearances are required. And then it does happen just the way you described, whether you're represented by counsel or not. That's what a judge does. So what does the legislature mean when they say shall attend?
I haven't researched whether that word appears in the probate court, Your Honor. So I don't know that I can give a definitive answer to the court as to what a more technical legal definition of to attend means. I think, and this is the first time, Your Honors, that I've heard that the agent or representative from LSS did not want to be subject to cross-examination. That's the first time that I've heard that fact or that representation. That's very concerning to me.
That's interesting, counsel. So you, I think, then are acknowledging, I know LSS, that there was named as a witness. There was a representative of LSS yes. was named as a witness. So obviously you could have cross-examined LSS during trial, or you could have subpoenaed LSS. Isn't that right? And I realize it's not your burden of proof, but you could have.
I suppose if my recollection is correct, that person was not on my witness list. I think I probably had a blanket. Any witness on the respondent witness list. So yeah. I suppose in theory, I had the ability to call that person. But up until that point in the proceeding reflected in the record, I didn't know that that person was there. And I guess sort of following up on my point, if that person represented that she did not want to be subject to cross-examination, I think that raises some significant concerns.
If right, and you heard me, I share it, but at the same time, that is outside the record. So here's what I'd like to ask you about, it, given your time is waning. So we've all discussed, you know, the likely importance of the requirement for a guardian to attend a hearing, and certainly the legislature has required it. We're a little unsure what it means. But assuming that we find that that was an error here, that it is not clear on the record that LSS attended the hearing. We don't typically reverse on an error unless there is prejudice, right? So I'm unclear how your client was prejudiced by, again, I'm assuming that we all agree there was an error that LSS did not attend this hearing. Your client still was able to put on all the evidence he intended to put on. So I'm struggling with that. So help me out.
So my client is prejudiced because we were not able to direct examine the other proposed guardian. The court had two decisions to make between my client and the Lutheran Social Services as a professional guardian. If that person didn't attend, and I'm going to go with my definition of attending the hearing, being on the record, identifying oneself, if that person didn't attend, my client is prejudiced by the complete inability to examine or direct examine that person and as to their qualifications and suitability to be the guardian of his son.
So, counsel, you did not note that on the record, right? The district court, you never presented that argument to the district court. But you were unable to call the proposed guardian of LSS.
I did not, Your Honor. No, okay. That is not an argument.
I didn't see it. In my
closing brief, I remember writing that clearly, and I do not believe that argument in my closing brief.
Could I ask one more question, Judge Bradbull?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I understand, as I indicated earlier, your argument that the record is pretty slim on the specific abilities of Lutheran Social Services to service the proposed guardian. But what is very clear from this record, and I don't know that we could find that these findings were clearly erroneous, are that there is an abuse of discretion as to the rejection of your client as the proposed guardian in this matter. If that is in fact our analysis based on our limited ability, our limited review authority. How does this help your client? If in fact that part is clear from the order, we determine that it's clear from the order that your client will not be the proposed guardian. How is there prejudice here to your client?
Well, there's prejudice to my client because we were not able to get any information regarding the current guardian and whether that person was qualified to meet Ryan's complex needs going forward. So if the court is unwilling to make make a determination and issue an order that Judge Street abused her discretion by declining to appoint my client, this court certainly has the authority to enter an order saying Judge Street abused her discretion by not requiring the guardian to make an appearance and by taking zero testimony from the proposed guardian before making her decision. So at the very least, what this court could do is reverse and remand for further proceedings to give us the opportunity to examine and direct examine Lutheran Social Services to see if they are in fact qualified and doing a good job as Ryan's guardian.
Any other questions from the panel? All right, thanks so much, to both lawyers today. This matter was well argued, well briefed. We very much appreciate this opportunity to hear from you in addition to having the written submissions. So this matter is now submitted to the court for